You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 5th, 2010. This is episode 130, More iPad Ammunition. We're back with another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, and we are coming to you on May 5th, 2010. And I say we because, as usual, with me is Sally Draper from beautiful Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. It is beautiful here this morning, and I'm excited about our podcast. We not only get to talk book this week, but we get to talk two chapters.
A doubleheader.
Our favorite book. We've been working our way through The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture, written by Shane Hipps, and we somehow managed to skip it in the month of April, and so we want to play a little catch-up and try to get it wrapped up before summertime, and so we're doing chapters 6 and 7 today.
And these two chapters kind of go together anyway. As I was rereading through these again, one, chapter 6, talks about community in electronic culture, and that word community can have a lot of different meanings, but I think the way we're going to define it for our purposes in this book discussion is how Christians relate to one another, how they live together, how they worship together, how they talk together, and then how, of course, they do the work of the Lord together. And then chapter 7 is all about leadership and the way that has kind of changed over time. And Shane Hipps makes the case that media has enabled some of that change from an authoritarian leadership style to more communal or a shared leadership style. Very interesting. I found both chapters very interesting, but especially the second chapter is this really has application to our churches. And how our churches are led, and he does have some nice scriptural justification for some of the points that he makes. So, shall we jump into chapter 6?
Oh, I can hardly wait, Martin. You know, chapter 6 has mention of my favorite reality television show, Survivor. And where better to look for an example of individuals in a community kind of setting? And that's kind of what a lot of the focus of the chapter is.
Yeah, you might remember, and he focuses on this communal living concept early on in the chapter here, Shane Hipps does. And he draws a comparison between the tribal world, which equates to this communal living. And he talked about that earlier in the book, too, that with oral history being passed from person to person and family member to family member, a tribal community was obviously optimized for that, and that was really the way faith was shared and our values were transmitted from generation to generation, and people talked about it, and they wondered, you know, what does this mean together? And then along came the print world and the printing press, and it became very individualistic, where people would read the Word of God and basically think about it by themselves, by and large. And in that way, media, or our, you know, the electronic culture, and by that he meant the printing press at that time, changed how we were, as he would say, in community. So where does Survivor fit in here?
Well, you know, I think Survivor is a good example of the fact that they take these people from all walks of life who are individuals and have their own individual ways of functioning, and they throw them together in this communal living situation, and where they have to rely on one another. And so it's that contrast of the individualism and the community, you know, playing out in front of us and seeing those reactions that leads to the popularity of the show, makes it so interesting to watch as to how they're going to survive it all. So, you know, and I think we we do have those individual qualities within us, but yet we are moving toward more of the community, at least at a pretty high level, maybe not mm-hmm. at the deepest levels, but at a high level. And I think the Wells Tech podcast is probably a good example of that. I listen to another podcast pretty regularly called Podcacher about geocaching. And in both of our these communities that I regularly listen to and participate in, you know, we have this shared interest. We have a lot of commonality around a topic, but yet we are still individuals. And, you know, I'd say we don't know each other on the deepest of levels and know about our individual struggles or whatever. You know, we're at a high level, a community, but maybe not at a deep level.
Right. And yeah, I think that's a great illustration as you're thinking about the Lord's work and how we figure out what we're doing together. On one level, you and I talk about it. So we have that relationship, but we also have that we have our listeners who are also joining the conversation, and that's something that we encourage them to do. But in the end, you are going to use the things that we talk about in one way, as am I, as all of our listeners are as well. But that's not always the case in a church community where members, people who are interested in doing ministry, come together to do different things. And that's where I think Shane Hipps begins to talk about what he calls authentic community. And those of you that are following along at home and have the book, I think where he really kind of begins to zero in on this is on page 111. And I'm just going to read a paragraph here about authentic community. He says, "Authentic community is an elusive and slippery term, borrowing from sociologists and theologians. I share the assumption that authentic community involves high degrees of intimacy, permanency, and proximity. These practices foster shared memories as well as a shared imagination of the future, elements crucial to becoming the people of God. While what he calls relative intimacy can be gained in virtual settings, the experience of permanence and proximity have all but vanished. Without these, we lose our shared memories and imagination for where we are going, elements central to our identity as God's people." I think the point he's making, and this is easily seen, I think, as with the growth of social networks, is you have only one dynamic that can really be achieved, but the permanence and proximity are really hard to, you know, replicate in a virtual world that can only be seen in a face-to-face environment.
Yeah, I was reminded as I read that paragraph, Martin, about something a pastor said to me in the past, and how we form friendships by ordeal, by living together through the hard times, through maybe a building project in your church or through an illness, you know, within your church family or whatever. Those bonds are stronger, and they, just by nature, you know, being there face to face, than anything you could form online. It's just a different kind of relationship.
Yep. And then later on in that chapter, he also talks about blogs, and I'll read another paragraph. He says, "Churches have begun to use blogs, chat areas, and electronic bulletin boards in their efforts to build community. Yet there remains the danger of people finding connection through these electronic forms and believing they have found genuine intimacy. This can cause them to miss out on authentic community with the people they worship with each week." So he's afraid that there may, in the minds of some, that this might be a substitute for, you know, what he calls this authentic community, which really can't be replaced. And so the challenge, I think, for our churches is to, use some of these electronic tools to build relationships, but the end goal should be, you know, we need to get these people together.
And, you know, I really liked his illustration, Martin, where he talked about being in a job that primarily consisted of shooting off a lot of emails to people and asking them to get back to you and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the struggles he had in that kind of role, where he never really dealt with people face to face, but was more electronic communication involved in the work he was doing. And he was struggling. People weren't responding to him like he needed them to. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to try a different tactic and actually deal with the people face to face, go and into their space and meet them and sit with them and discuss what he needed from them in a face to face mode. And he got just dramatically better results. And it reminded me of the fact that, you know, I work from home and I don't have the face-to-face interaction with the majority of people that I work with. And so it does present its own set of challenges when that's what you're solely relying on. And, you know, we just really need to have some caution that we don't get away from the face-to-face community building, for sure.
Yep. And that section that you're referring to in the book, he entitles or raises the question or makes a statement, there's a difference between being in touch and in community. And that's very true. I think that's what you were really talking about. Then let's go to Chapter 7, Leadership in Electronic Culture. And I really found this interesting because this has some real important application, I think, to how our congregations are organized and the position of the pastor and how church councils work and how leadership in general has kind of found its level in some situations. He talks about access to information or media and how that suggests or defines who's in authority. And so the power is with the information. So I think of the Pharisees who had the writings and interpreted that for the people. And then obviously later, just before the time of Luther, the Catholic Church really took that role and said, you know, we have a corner on doctrine. Therefore, you need to listen to us and we'll tell you, you know, what it all means. You know, we are the purveyors of that information. And if we don't say it, it is not true, or you don't need to know about it. And that obviously, and he spends quite a good deal talking about the Reformation, which is kind of great, from a Mennonite pastor talking about, you know, how Luther had such a profound impact on the church and how the Reformation changed that, where the printing press got that word, God's word, into the hands of people. And he even mentions the sola scriptura portion of the way Luther approached faith and life and God's word, not sola the Pope, you know, in other words.
So there was that huge shift, you know, as we look back historically from the power, the knowledge, the information being in the hands of a few to going out to the people. But even at that time, you know, you make that distinction that it was in the hands of the scholars, those who could read and provide interpretation, you know, of the scriptures and that kind of thing. So even with the Reformation, that power didn't shift completely.
Right.
To the hands of all people.
There were still people that needed to study it a little bit more deeply and share it, and that was the scholars, the pastors. You know, there were people that had the skills necessary for a little bit deeper thought and would read the Bible and offer commentary. This is what it means, and that's one of the reasons Luther wrote the Catechism and those kinds of things, to try and get that down to the common man's level. But I think the point of this chapter that Shane Hipps tries to make is that now the internet has really advanced that concept, so that now you have the same kind of information available at your keyboard, you know, right on the screen.
Right. So that power, that knowledge, that information is disseminated out to the world via the internet by everyone having that information at their fingertips. And so that, in a sense, is a scary thing that makes everyone the scholar that makes everyone their own authority, maybe without the proper training or whatever. So
right.
There's a conundrum there, and that's where, you know, Shane focuses on leadership and what is
right.
leadership's role in the church, you know, given the fact that this information is in everyone's hands, basically.
Yep. Yeah, and there's a section on page 130, if you're following along, called A New View of Leadership. And I'll just read a couple sections there, too, which I thought were pretty insightful. He says, in this sense, electronic media help us revive the biblical vision in which authority and leadership are based not on exclusive access to information, but on personal character, spiritual vitality, gifts, and communal affirmation. And he lists a number of passages, Acts, 1 Corinthians, 1 Timothy. Authority is still granted and leadership is still important, but seminary training and ordination are no longer the primary litmus test of qualifying a person for leadership and authority. And he talks about how Pentecostals and Anabaptist traditions have understood and applied that a little bit differently. And he goes on, while this move toward egalitarian leadership is positive in many ways, not everything is rosy. The effects of electronic media on church leadership can also lead to unintended negative consequences. These negative effects are often below our radar because they happen in slow and subtle ways. The real loss for church leadership comes not from access to information, but rather from the form that readily available information is taking. We know that graphic and electronic revolutions have undermined our capacity for the kind of high-level reasoning and abstract thought fostered during the print age. Electronic media encourage more right-brained, metaphorical modes of thinking, and in turn atrophy left-brain analytic capacities.
That's easy for you.
Easy for me to say. And then he goes back into, you know, the importance of seminary training and people who spend time thinking more deeply about and studying deeper thoughts about some of these scriptural truths that they can share and shed light on for the parishioner.
Right. I think a lot of focus in this section on the left brain versus the right brain. And
mm-hmm.
if we review, you know, we talked about that early on in the book, that the left brain is the analytical side, and that book knowledge and book background, reading background, allows us to process these thoughts that we're reading and build our own pictures in our minds and think through them, you know, analytically. And when you don't have that fully developed, when you're more of the right brain
mm-hmm.
type of person, then you're not going to have the deeper thoughts and analysis at your fingertips to understand scripture possibly the way they need to. So
mm-hmm.
As a good leader, then you need that left brain knowledge and analytical skill, but you need to then be able to convey that knowledge, I guess would be a good thing, to your members and your church leadership that maybe doesn't have that thorough scriptural
mm-hmm.
knowledge that
right.
that seminary training would provide.
Yeah, and he makes the point here that some would argue that the internet makes all that information available, understandable, whatever. But the internet is kind of a right brain activity. He says, in contrast, the internet presents a non-linear web of interconnected pages and a vast mosaic of hyperlinks with absolutely no beginning, middle, or end. So it's not systematic theology. It's just out there, and you kind of have to make sense of it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe to close, I thought there was an interesting story on consensus building. I don't know if you remember reading that part of it, but you know, one leadership style in one church that he observed, instead of a traditional voters' meeting where you have a resolution and people raise their hand and say, "Yeah, I vote for that," or you know, "Yes or no vote." One leadership style that he found very interesting was one where consensus must be built for a decision to be made. So we offered to go ahead.
I'm just going to clarify, when he talked about consensus, basically unanimous
right.
agreement
yes.
is what they were looking for.
Everybody,
not the majority rules.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody agreeing that this is the way we will do it. And I'm trying to find it in the book now, but One example he provided is one congregation looking to move their service time from Sunday evening, so they were a Sunday evening worship service at 6 o'clock, to Sunday morning at 9 a.m. And there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of meetings, and the whole point of kind of consensus building is to talk through it long enough that people either will see the other's point of view, and maybe they don't necessarily agree with it, but for the common good would ultimately say, yeah, I see that this is probably overall in the best interest of our church. And they finally decided to move it to 9 a.m. There were, I think he said, like eight people who were staunch, saying we can't move this from 6 p.m. You know, we're really vehement about this, but ultimately they gave in. And then the first Sunday they held it at 9 o'clock. Those eight people came in their pajamas. This is kind of their own little protest, but they came, and you know everything was fine, and that was okay to disagree.
It reminds me of my weekend. I spent the weekend at MVL, Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School, watching 12 Angry Jurors, their drama for the spring. Mm-hmm. And they did a lot of consensus building in their jury room as well. So
right.
An interesting approach for a church leader to take that, you know, it's not a top-down approach, but everyone being involved in the decision and everyone having power in the decision.
Yeah. So interesting concept, and how he ties electronic culture and the written word and the visual word and imagery, how they affect not only how we relate to one another, but even how we lead, in a congregation. So good stuff. All right. Well, I don't know how many chapters. Are we almost to the end, Sally, here? It looks like
we have one to go.
Okay. So we'll have to look for...
So we will hit that one in June and wrap up this book.
Absolutely. All right. Let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah. We wanted to point you this week to Logos Bible Software again. We've talked before, Martin, about Logos coming out with an iPod app, and they have updated their software again, and they now have an iPad Bible app.
Of course,
so for
they
those
do.
Listeners that are iPad users, I'm guessing you're going to have an even better experience being able to do your Logos and sync your Logos to an iPad with a larger screen and do your Bible study and reading on an iPad. So check out the iPad software link that we'll provide in the show notes and give us a review. If you do have an iPad, tell us what the Logos software is like for you.
And apparently lots of people do have iPads. I saw an article yesterday that Apple sold their 1 millionth iPad in just under a month of time. So quite the revolution.
And does your son have one yet?
Not that I'm aware of.
Keeping tabs on him.
That's right. News and tech.
You found an interesting application for Facebook.
Yep. This is a Microsoft product. Microsoft is, some would consider, a little bit behind the curve when it comes to cloud computing. But they've had some cloud offerings for some time, and through their Windows Live experience, you have things like SkyDrive, which is going to be my pick of the day or pick of the week. And they've developed applications that can be stored and run in the cloud. And one of them, obviously, is their kind of the cornerstone of the Office suite, Microsoft Word, which most of us use. They've made that available in a cloud format, but they've taken that a step further where they've now set up a partnership with Facebook so that you can collaborate with your Facebook friends on Microsoft Word Docs. This is out of their what they call their Fuse Labs, and it's still in beta, so you can sign up for the beta, and I have not been accepted yet, so it must be a pretty long line. But you can actually go there and try. You can read other documents that have been posted. But the concept here is that you'd be able to collaborate with your Facebook friends on Microsoft Word Docs. And I've used their tool before in their Windows Live experience, online experience. And it's really a cool application. I believe it's a lot better than Google Docs, for instance, a lot more full-featured. It's not as full-featured as the desktop version, of course, of Microsoft Word, but I think it has plenty there for people to use and collaborate on it. And if you have a Facebook account, I think very soon you'll be able to use and share Microsoft Word Docs. So that's Microsoft Docs for Facebook. And we'll put all those links in the show notes, too.
Definitely. You know, Martin, I just am daily amazed at the things that they're coming up with. It's an ever-changing landscape, and it seems like Facebook is a big part of all the things that are being developed these days. So
they are
making a lot of news than initially the design, I think. So.
Yep, I think they have the goal of internet domination, as many internet companies do. So I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, they're trying to get into a lot of corners of our life, similar to what Google does, too. So it'll be interesting as we go forward. Shall we move on to our picks of the week?
You bet. This week, I wanted to point to Google Apps as my pick. And, you know, we were talking in our planning. I don't think we've ever had Google Apps as a pick, which is kind of surprising.
We've talked about it, but I don't know that we've ever had a pick, yeah.
Yeah. It's also kind of funny that I mentioned to you I found an article, I think it's on the Mashable website, about why schools are turning to Google Apps. And you had tagged the same article, found it from a different source than me, so we decided we were running in the same circles or something, reading the same things. But
that's no surprise to our listeners, I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway, it is a free application for education as well as nonprofits. So whether you're a church or a school, you can get access to Google Apps for free. And basically what it allows you to do is integrate Google's email system, Google Groups, Google Calendar, Google Sites, all those different applications into your own website domain name. And there's a little bit of a setup process, but Google walks you through that and provides you the codes and other information that you need to make it work with your web domain. And what it does from an education perspective, at least according to this Mashable article, is it saves money, it boosts student motivation and performance, and prepares them for the real world. So they're using tools that they would be using in the future, you know, right there at a student level. And certainly gives you some great Google applications to make use of. I'm a huge fan of Gmail, so just introducing their email system to your school or church could be a big benefit. And they have great spam filtering and lots of features that come along with Gmail. But a lot of their other applications are very robust and useful as well. Certainly Google Calendar. We've talked about having a shared calendar for your church and or school so that you can keep up with all different events going on and embedded in your website. Google Docs, just like you were talking about Microsoft Docs for Facebook, having collaborative Google Docs can be a huge benefit to a church or school as you're working on group projects or whatever. And I can see a huge benefit to teachers as well, having their students turn in their assignment, you know, using the whole electronic platform rather than paper. And there's much more to the Google suite of applications. There's a whole Google Marketplace where you can go and find custom applications that might be of benefit to you. So check out Google Apps if you're looking for a web-based solution or platform to develop for your church and school. A lot of different powerful tools there.
Yep, I don't have experience in the school side, although what we did do for our church is we got a Google Apps account for education, actually. And we use it primarily right now for internal document sharing for our church council. So our church council posts all of the meeting minutes, all the separate boards post their reports up there. We post budgets, agendas, all those kinds of things. And everybody can have their own email address, and login and security is can be fairly granular, so you can go down to the document level, a folder level, sharing those kinds of things. And again, it's free, and I think it's fairly easy to set up. I manage it for our group, but I know other schools and churches that are doing this as well, and it's it's really a nice replacement and kind of gives you that professional look. And if privacy is a concern, this kind of takes care of that. So, and it's free. So it's, I think Google's doing a good thing here by allowing educational institutions and nonprofits to use their tools. And then as things progress, as Google adds new products, then they get added in here too.
Yep. And you're making that work with your final website, integrated with your domain on your final website, but using it more for intranet kind of internal communication. And,
yeah. So,
and that's what we kind of envision with ours as well.
Yeah. We have peacehartford.org as our domain name, but our intranet is intranet.peacehartford.org. So if you, for members or for church council members in our case, that's where they would go instead of peacehartford.org. But other churches can actually use Gmail and some of these tools as their email client as opposed to final webs. So there's options there too. All right. My pick, which I think I've referenced in the past, I don't know if I had a specific pick for it, is Windows Live SkyDrive. I referenced it earlier in the show. SkyDrive is a cloud-based storage solution similar to Dropbox or MobileMe, those kinds of things. It's a Windows solution. You need a Windows Live account, which is free. But SkyDrive provides 25 gigabytes of storage free. And that's great. That's a lot of space up there for you to store pictures or documents or whatever. And one of the things that has happened over the course of time is people have figured out ways to map that to your local file system so that it appears just as a map drive on your computer. And we'll put a couple of links to those in the show notes. With the use of Office 2010, it makes it real easy because 2010 supports direct saving to SkyDrive, but also you can map a drive. But there's other tools like Gladinet and those kinds of tools that I think we've talked about in the past that will allow you to create a drive letter there for it as well. But you might as well take care of that free, take advantage of that free storage that that they provide. And it provides two kinds of storage, really. You can have very private storage where only you can see it, but there's also a public folder. So if you need to share files with anybody, you can post them up there and just give them direct links to that file where they can download them. Now, you have a limit of 50 megabytes in upload size, so that may be limiting for some kinds of files, but most files are well under that, so you can take advantage of that. So that's Windows Live SkyDrive.
You know, the more collaboration you do, the more you need that file sharing capability. And whether you decide to settle on one solution or make use of several, you know, I think it's great that they have this free storage available to us, Windows Live, Dropbox, Google Docs. They all have that kind of offering. So really powerful tool when it comes to sharing and working with others.
Mm-hmm. Shall we move on? We've got a couple of items we want to remind our listeners about.
That's right, Martin. Coming up very soon, we will kick off our summer series. It's called A Road Trip, and we want to visit virtually your congregation or school and learn about something specific that you're doing there that's affecting your ministry using technology. We've had a couple of people already sign up to be part of the road trip, and we're looking forward to gathering more. So if you are maybe having great success with your email newsletter or are using a blog or wiki in your classroom setting, perhaps you're doing live streaming or have social connections via Facebook or Twitter, we'd love to visit with you on one of our summer shows and make you a map marker on our virtual road trip. So please contact us. We'll have a link in the show notes where you can email us or leave us a voicemail and tell us about your ideas. And we are really looking forward to this summer series that's coming up.
Yeah, and I don't know that you have to be wildly successful at it. If you if you've just got you've got something going that you think has some potential, and maybe would like to talk to us about it or get feedback even from our other listeners, that would be good enough as far as I'm concerned. So if you've got an idea that's just kind of in its beginning stages, but you seem hopeful about it, let's talk about it. So share your stuff.
That's right. We're always excited to learn more, and you know, there's many, many people out there, and perhaps you feel intimidated to share and that they wouldn't want to do the same thing you are, but just giving people ideas and telling them how you did it could be a springboard for them to do something similar or maybe a little different, but
Can be
really
church,
appreciate it.
can be classroom, doesn't matter.
Absolutely. And also coming up this summer, you and I are going to be doing some teaching again. We're going to be doing final web training on July 19th through 22nd. We have two different classes. The first is a one-day session called Final Web for Teachers, and it's geared toward kind of a fast track to get teachers going on a classroom website and making their classroom websites the best they can be, including documents, images, and all other types of content that might be appropriate for classroom websites. And then we get a little more intense. We have Final Web for Dummies, which is a 3-day session. We have a beginning, intermediate, and advanced day, so you can come for one or two or all three if you want. And Final Web for Dummies covers the full gamut, probably the webmaster's view of a final website, and everything from security and intranets to top bar images, image editing, audio and video. We cover it all in those 3 days, and you can count on us to feed you well. We're going to have meals and snacks provided,
We eat
and
well, yes.
yes, we do. And we're offering it in two locations, at the Senate Administration Building in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and at Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota. So pick the most convenient location and join us for some summer training on Final Web.
Very
And
good.
we have two different links that we'll include in the show notes. The Final Web for Teachers link is bit.ly/FW4Teachers, the number 4 in there. And then the Final Web for Dummies is bit.ly/FW, the number 4 Dummies. And so look for those links and get signed up today.
Very good. Look forward to having you guys. Community feedback.
Well, we heard from our tweeting teacher, Jason Schmidt, out in Omaha, Nebraska, at Gethsemane Lutheran School, and he had some great resources to share with us. First of all, following up on our professional development discussion in last week's show, Jason tweeted that he is a certified smart board trainer. So if you're looking for some smart board training, you could get in touch with Jason. We'll have his Twitter account listed in the show notes if you'd like to make contact with him for some smart board training. And he's going to actually be one of our stops on our road trip. We're really excited to include Jason because he's been doing some work on Christlight materials
Oh,
for the
that's
smart
cool.
board.
I'm looking forward
So,
to that.
yeah, that'll be a wonderful resource for all our teachers that are listening. In addition, Jason shared a link to an interesting article that was just out from Christian Computing Online, and it's called Using the Apple iPad in Ministry. So if you are curious about applications for ministry, I know Pastor Phil Huebner down in Palm Coast, Florida, bought some for their preschool program. So lots of creative uses. Here in Minnesota, one of our public schools nearby, Sleepy Eye, is buying iPads for all of the entire high school starting next year. So definitely some education type uses. And now here's a great article dedicated to ministry uses. So check out this article.
So with the lug us now on iPad and this article crammed packed full with reasons why a pastor needs an iPad. You gonna try and hide this episode from Kevin?
I think that we've got that burning desire. I don't know if we'll be near the Apple store or not, but watch out if we are. It's not just one person in our house
I'm
that needs
thinking, yes.
something. Yeah, we can blame it on him.
Okay.
And finally, Jason tweeted a link to Starmatica, which is a fee-based service, it appears, that has great resources to use on a smart board. And they do have a free trial, so I would encourage you to check it out and send us your reviews of the site. If you're a smart board user, see what they have to offer and let us know if you think it's worth the subscription fees that are involved at Starmatica. All right, next up, I had an email from Missionary Mike Hartman, who is our one of our listeners down in the Mexico missionary setting.
One of our international listeners.
That's right. And he says he heard last week's podcast and was excited to hear his Lutherans in Mexico .blogspot.com website mentioned in the podcast. And in regard to backups, which was our topic when Rob Benson was on the show, he says he uses Carbonite as a backup system. And he likes that it works automatically in the background and he doesn't have to think about it at all, which is the perfect backup solution in my opinion. And he says, even though
it's
not
only
free,
backup solution, I think.
Yeah. He says the time saver and peace of mind are worth it for me. He has only two criticisms he wanted to offer. One is it causes problems with their Vonage phone line. And so he usually pauses Carbonite before he answers the phone. And the other is it doesn't back up video automatically, which he thinks is understandable. Video files are typically very large, but it does prove to be a minor drawback for him. So some great feedback on Carbonite.
Yeah, that's why I prefer Backblaze. That's been one of my picks in the past where it does not affect. You can throttle it down to just kind of a trickle, you know, of data that goes up over time, and you can point it at anything. Now, I don't know if Carbonite does it or not, and I've tried Carbonite and Carbonite Pro. I think I've talked about that in the past, too. One thing about Backblaze, it'll also back up connected devices, so I could, and maybe Carbonite does this, I'm not sure, but I could hook up an external hard drive, and it'll actually back that up as well. All for that one price, which I think is about $50 a year. So all these solutions they've really come a long way and made it very simple to just start them and hopefully just forget them and let them do their work. Because as you mentioned, that's the best way to do a backup is one that you
Absolutely.
Don't have to remember to do something. It just does it for you. So until you need it, right?
And then hopefully it's pretty easy to use when you do need it.
So. Right, right.
All right. Last up, I had an email from David Schumann, who's a member of Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin. And he was floating an idea about a virtual Wells Academy and maybe a collaborative effort he would love to see happen where people could educate their children from home via the internet, basically. And, you know, there's multiple reasons why you might want to do that kind of thing. But in investigating it a little bit with Jim Grunwald, who's a professor at MLC and the academic distance learning person for Wells.
Director of distance learning.
There you go. He let me know that there is a group of area Lutheran high schools that are working together on a pilot program along these lines. So they're looking at the fact that some high schools are able to offer some courses while others can't, and being able to share the resources in that regard. And potentially starting a pilot program as early as this fall. And so if you're interested at all in more details about that, you certainly could check in with Jim Grunwald and find out more about their committee and that kind of thing. But we'll certainly be keeping tabs on this, Martin, and seeing how they progress with their pilot program and, you know, sharing that with our listeners as it does develop.
That'd be great. I'm looking forward to that. Yep. That's it for committee feedback, I think. Correct.
Yeah, I think that's all I'm aware of today.
If you'd like to connect with us, wellstech.wells.net is the place to go. We have all kinds of options there. You can comment on the blog there. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/wellstech. So join us and stay updated on conversations that go on there. You can send us a voicemail. That phone number is on the web page. All kinds of ways. You can follow Sally at Wells. I always forget Sally.
Wells Tech Trainer. Yes.
And I'm at M. Spriggs. If you want to follow us on Twitter, all that good stuff is available to you. So join the conversation. Next week, we're going to be hopefully joined by Perry Lund, one of our longtime listeners. He's been doing some work with Joomla and their church website. Joomla is a content management system that we've talked about in the past and maybe would be right for you. So come and listen next week as we talk with Perry and we have a conversation in general about web design. What are the components of a good-looking and effective church or school website? What are the considerations? You know, does it have to cost money? What kind of skill sets do you need? All that kind of stuff about web design. Everybody, I think, needs to pay attention to that in the world that we live, because you are in competition with all kinds of other websites if you want to get your word out.
And I guess, you know, pay attention to it on an ongoing basis. So even if you've heard or participated in a conversation like that and had those conversations within your congregation, there's always room to improve and look at new ideas for your website.
So there's a little teaser for you. So we'll be back next week talking about that. Let's close the show with the music of Cross to Glory, a rather new addition to the rotation of Wells artists that we have on the show. Pastor Chris Christensen is the vocalist here, and he's going to be singing one of my new favorite songs. I was just really enjoying that this morning, entitled One Name from the album Life's Song. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Burden buried, bound in slavery, labor long and far from home, working, wishing, wanting, waiting, not forgotten, not alone. Exodus must be the answer. The power of God intercede, guiding, guarding through the water. Fire and cloud, take the lead. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to lead to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. Finding, feeling this new freedom, yet there's grumbling on the quest. No satisfaction, no thanksgiving. Put the giver to the test. Gracious God, He gives in mercy, even to faithless cries. Water from the rock is flowing, bread and bird from on high. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to lead to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. Looking, lust, and longing idols, God of self and God of gold, pagan treasure, fleshly desire, the human heart would be sold. Dying souls need their salvation. The Lamb of God slain to kill, lifted high with our sin bearing, all who look to Him will live. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to lead to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to lead to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. One name to Christ, glory be. Only one name under heaven, Christ by which we must be saved.